welcome back to Consider This with Sharad Kutan. I'm Melissa Idris. Let's continue our conversation with Dr. Musa Nordin about the need for clear communication regarding the safety of vaccines and also the rollout of the national vaccination process. Dr. Musa, I think myself and like many other Malaysians read on an almost daily basis how some country or the other has begun their vaccination program, you know, Singapore, Indonesia and Myanmar, just to name a few regional peers. Are we behind? And is there a good reason for us not to be first in line when it comes to a new vaccine, even during a pandemic? Because coming back to what you mentioned just before the break about how, if any, should there be any adverse reaction to the vaccine, it would happen almost immediately after the inoculation. So have we put those things in place? Have we put those processes in place, the distribution, the injection and the monitoring?
Yeah. A bit disconcerting that we are a bit slow in the acquisition of the vaccine, because we all recognize that the vaccine is one of many strategies for us to exit this pandemic. Yeah, I need to remind your viewers that even though we have the vaccine, it doesn't mean that we stop putting on our mask, we stop with our personal hygiene. We must continue with physical distancing, ensure good ventilation. That's extremely important. Until we reach a level of maybe 70 to 80% of herd immunity. Yeah? Now, yes, we've secured about 39% from Pfizer, another 10% from AstraZeneca, another 10% from COVAX, the WHO initiative, and another 20% from Sinovac China. So that's about 80%. That's credible. That's very good. We hope by the end of February, the vaccines will have arrived and we can kickstart immediately to ensure that all the eligible persons get the vaccine. Yeah. And how do we decide this? Basically, it's a balance between two important criteria. One is to prevent mortality and morbidity, which means we need to address the high-risk groups, i.e. the warga emas, in excess of 65 years old, the ones in care homes, yeah, the ones who have comorbidities. So we lower the mortality and morbidity. And the other is we need to take care of society. We need to make sure that the hospitals are functioning. We need to make sure that there is peace, so which means we need to immunize the healthcare workers. And then we need to immunize the frontliners, i.e. the policemen, the soldiers, the bomber, the one who brings food to us in our homes. So that's the balance that we have to make. And I think the Ministry of Health and MOSFI have arranged for this. But my reminder to them is that we really need to roll it out ASAP, because in the United States of America, one of the guys who sits on the board, Paul Offit, was saying, we've got 20 million vaccines sitting in the fridge, yet we've only rolled out 7 million, which is a third. So that's why we don't want 1 million or half a million coming in Malaysia, and most of it is sitting in the fridge and not out in the deltoids of the those who are eligible.
Musa, there seems to be a conversation now, and I think perhaps anchored in the strategy, I believe, taken in the United Kingdom, that of vaccinating as many people as possible, beyond the priority groups, and pushing back the second dose. And this would be relevant to the Pfizer protocol, which is, I think, a three-week gap between the first and second jab. Where do you stand in this? Because the new mantra seems to be getting some vaccine is better than having none.
Thank you, Sharad. That's an excellent question. And it is something that is being debated by the scientists now. I would stand with good science. And good science means I'm with the American methodology, i.e. if you do the Pfizer vaccine, the first dose must be given and the second dose at 21 days. With the Moderna, first dose and the second dose at 28 days. This is to make sure that we get that 95% protection in the community and we prevent the COVID virus from escaping and forming what we call escape mutants. This is what we are seeing now happening in the United Kingdom, the Ken strain, B117, and what's happening in South Africa, the B13513, which is very dismissible, and it's beginning to evade the effectiveness of the vaccine. Yeah. Now, the only rationale that I can give to the British methodology is, yes, they want to vaccinate as many as possible. I think they can only do this with the AstraZeneca vaccine, the AZ vaccine in collaboration with the University of Oxford, because it has been shown that with the AZ vaccine, you give the first dose and you delay it to 6 weeks instead of 4 weeks, the efficacy is actually higher at 72% compared to 60%. So I think if I were to go the British way, I would only do it with the AZ vaccine, not with the Pfizer vaccine, not with the Moderna vaccine.
Dr. Musa, you brought up the mutations and they have been making headlines. Is there a reason for us to be concerned, to be alarmed?
The guys at Pfizer and Moderna have studied the convalescent plasma of the survivors of COVID, and they compared it with the antibody levels with the mRNA vaccine. They found that the mutant strain was not resistant, i.e. it was effective in both the UK and South Africa. However, with the Novavax vaccine, which is the protein, they found that the efficacy was reduced, in particular with the South African strain. It's about 50%. And with the British strain, it was about, less than the virgin strain, the efficacy was 95%. But with the Kent strain, i.e. the B117, it was lesser, maybe about 85%. So, you know, it's escaping and becoming resistant to the protein vaccine as well as the viral vector vaccine, but not with the mRNA vaccine.
So what you're saying is that there is no, we cannot delay. You're saying that we need to
get a move on this. As fast as possible and ramp up the uptake and coverage of the vaccine before we get the strain spreading in Malaysia.
Musa, what is the conversation that you understand about follow-up, perhaps booster shots after a year? Because we don't know how long the vaccines last. And in that case, what should the policymakers be thinking about in terms of, say, the second round of vaccines? Should we go for vaccines that are tropical, climate friendly, that don't require some, complex cold chain distribution systems? What would be the long-term thing? As many experts are saying, COVID's here to stay. It's a question of managing it.
Yeah, sure. That's a very difficult question. The answer is we do not know. As far as we can tell, with the natural COVID, with the wild COVID virus, up to 5 months, the antibodies were protective. And after 5 months, they begin to wane, begin to reduce. And that's why for those who have suffered COVID, they have been advised to go ahead and take the vaccine, because as far as they can tell, it's only up to a 5 month protection. But if you look, we've got four coronavirus, benign coronavirus, living this earth as it is, coexisting with us. And we find that the protection against this benign coronavirus, this four types, is about a year. So maybe we can think in that terms. But just to give you, I'm the absolute optimist, Sharad and Melissa. We've lived with this virus for a year, isn't it?
Yeah.
We've got
absolutely.
How many million cases in the world? How many million cases? About 200 million cases, isn't it? The reinfections are very far and few in between. I've heard the Koreans have reported about 50, the British have reported about another 100. So maybe just less than 500 cases of reinfection. What does that mean? 200 million cases, only about 500 reinfections. That means it might maybe lasting for about a year. So I'm thinking in that direction. But the answer is, honest answer is, we do not know.
Okay. Dr. Musa, in the time that we have left, we've got a few minutes left. Now, I want to pivot the conversation to Malaysia's national vaccine rollout. We're looking at mass vaccination in the US and the UK. They're already struggling with various challenges in administrating these vaccines that they've received. It's likely that when we are going to do that, we will also encounter similar obstacles rolling this out. What are you most concerned about? What do you see as our biggest hurdles?
I think the biggest hurdle is first convincing the public that this is a safe vaccine, right? Winning over that 25 to 30% of vaccine hesitant rakyat. And that's why in the next few weeks, we have to really work very hard. The Ministry of Health, KOLs, you know, key opinion leaders, the Immunize for Life, my friends in all the societies, infectious disease societies, should be speaking, right? We had a webinar with doctors, 500 doctors. When we did the webinar, 75% only opted for the vaccine. Another 25 said no. At the end of the webinar, we managed to convince 17%. So it went up to 92%. It's important that doctors and nurses are convinced, because the rakyat, your client, the patients have full trust in us. So if we say, yes, go for the vaccine, I've had the vaccine, I'm a doctor, I've looked after you for the past 15 years, go. This will inspire confidence. I think this is the number one issue. And then the second issue is logistics. The Minister of Health and MOSTI needs to get its act. And if you want to learn, you have to learn it from the Israelis. They have managed to vaccinate 60% of the population, or learn from the UAE. They have managed to vaccinate 40% of the population. Send some of our guys there, learn how they do it, and then we can apply it in Malaysia.
Right. Okay. Dr. Musa, thank you so much for your time. I can hear the strain on your voice, and I know that you've been in webinars all day, giving interviews all day, talking about the importance of clear communication over the COVID-19 vaccines, and I appreciate your time. Thank you so much for being on the show tonight.
And we'll definitely have you back.
Yes,
definitely
have you back.
Thank you very much for having me.
You're welcome.
That's all the time we have for you on this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching, and good night.